views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the transformative show, We Carry the Light, with host Dr. Susan Allison, the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. Who are you right now? And who do you want to be? What is it that makes you happy, helps you feel fulfilled, and living your purpose? Tune in and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine. Now, here is your host, Dr. Susan Allison.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to We Carry the Light. So the last time I looked, I am still Dr. Susan, and you are my wonderful listeners. Thanks so much for joining us live or listening to the archive show later. Excuse me, I have a frog in my throat. Just reminding you that you can go to my archive shows anytime and listen to the ones that you've missed. So you just go to transformationtalkradio.com. And go to my host page, Dr. Susan Allison, and you'll find all my shows listed there by month. So, I was speaking of the show titles, you know, which is We Carry the Light. And so speaking of light, I have been reading Linda Carroll's illuminating book, Love Cycles. And the light bulb definitely went on in my head about romantic relationships. So I just wish I was telling her before the show, I wish I'd had it, when I was in college or in high school, especially, or 20 years ago when my husband Tom and I met. Linda explains each stage in her book in a love relationship. And now I know why I felt so crazy early on and so head over heels in love with my husband. And I wasn't able to eat or sleep. And at times I really did feel like I was losing my mind. And I love the comparison in the book to chocolate. You know, there's this drug-induced state that we're in that first stage. Also, you know, I understand now why I pulled away and actually ran out of the relationship, sort of like, you know, the movie Runaway Bride, but I didn't get to the altar, you know, the way it happens in the movie. I didn't go that far, but I did run away 4 times before we got married. And we finally did marry and had an incredible 19 years together before my husband Tom's death. We really worked at it. And yes, it felt magical at first. And I know that we were and are soulmates and even twin flames. And also we had times that were really challenging and we had to focus on our relationship and work through our issues and move forward in new ways. So I get it now. And Linda Carroll's book has helped me get it. It's all part of the cycles that we go through on the way to committed, wholehearted love. And Tom and I went through each one of these stages that she describes in her book. On today's show, Linda Carroll will take us through these cycles to help us all understand our relationships and their stages more clearly. The goal? I feel it's not only to understand our love cycles, but to take action to create the very best relationship possible. Linda Carroll is qualified to be our mentor today. She's been a couples therapist for over 30 years, offering clients ways to understand their relationship in new ways and sustain love over time. She is certified in transpersonal psychology and is a master teacher of pairs therapy. Ms. Carroll offers workshops across the country and is a frequent speaker at conferences. Her book, Love Cycles, was published in 2014 and presents the ways to become our own best selves and share ourselves joyfully and honestly with one another. Hi, Linda. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here. We started a very good conversation.
Yes, we did. I could have just kept talking to you, but you know, we weren't on the air yet, so we'll continue now. So, what does, for people who haven't read your book, what does the phrase love cycles mean? And why is it helpful to understand where we are in our relationship?
I think because we have a culture that is so strong about the first cycle, and that what we learn culturally from songs and and movies and poetry is that stage, what I call stage one, the merge, is what we think of as what love is. And that kind of love is all about a feeling. And that's the feeling of love. But loving is a skill set. Learning how to really love another person is not about a feeling. In fact, a lot of the loving takes place when we're not feeling the feeling. Sometimes we are feeling the opposite. And so, and I know that probably people are saying, what does that mean? And the thing about the going through the stages and understanding that we don't always have the feeling, but it doesn't mean we're in the wrong relationship, really encourages us to do the work and to be loving, even when we're annoyed or upset or feel betrayed or just feel ambivalent about being in the relationship. And I'm not talking about that knowing that sometimes people may have after a long period where they say, I need to be out of this. This is not the relationship that I need to be in. But I'm talking about a relationship that really is right, but it doesn't always stay in the stars. You know, there's one of the things I say is that long-term good marriages have bad problems. Long-term relationships have trouble because as human beings, we are trouble. And we all, you know, we have our own troubles that we bring to it. And so a long-term relationship has many seasons. And some of that's summer and sun, and some of that's fog, and sometimes it's winter. So, and you were in a 20-year marriage. You know what I'm talking about, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's not always sort of that amazing feeling that we feel when we fall in love.
You know, I'm not playing devil's advocate, but I do want to bring up something that came up for me about the first cycle. The first cycle is the merging with another person. What about the spiritual connection? What about a connection that you feel is sort of beyond and is actually really spiritual, and you can journey sort of up into the ether and be in past life together and have all of this connection? Because I had that with my husband. So I was wondering, you do mention the spiritual in terms of the heart later on in your book, but not as much in the beginning. So what about a connection that you feel is also spiritual from the beginning?
Well, I think, you know, there's so many ways that we can talk about that. That's a big topic.
And I'm going to
respond back with the devil's advocate. And I'm going to say that I think that we can feel that. I think that part of the chemicals that we feel when we fall in love, that those chemicals open our heart to all kinds of possibilities. But remember, Susan, the strength of the feeling does not necessarily mean that this is the right person. And a lot of people get into trouble like that. They feel a very deep sense. And if you're a person who feels a lot spiritually or who feels that you're connected, whatever that means to you, you're going to feel that when you fall in love. And I felt that when I fell in love with totally inappropriate people. We were together in a past life where everything is so familiar. I know what you're going to say before you say it. And those are people I should have run like crazy the other way, including the person I felt it with when I was 11 years old.
So I remember your story about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think that there's an imposter quality to that, and that there is a lot of people who meet somebody quickly and leave lives for their soulmate that are, you know, good working lives or move across the world, because sometimes that works out, but a lot of times it's a disaster. Because what we feel spiritually is one thing. The qualities that it takes to make a long-term relationship work are often a very different thing. I'm not saying they can't go together, but sometimes they don't. And so, you know, look at what happens when people fall in love with gurus or spiritual teachers.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, So I think that it's a very, I mean, I certainly had that because I feel that all the time. I mean, I live in sort of a different realm, and I have to make myself live on the earth. So that's caused mm-hmm. me a lot of trouble. But, mm-hmm. you know, I think when my husband and I met 40 years ago, and we've been together for 30 years in this marriage, we had a lot of that happen, but we had a lot of trouble too. And I think about what I feel right now with him is a closeness that feels much more spiritual, because it really mm-hmm. comes out of the work we have done with some really difficult troubles between us, and yep. that we've worked through that. And I feel a certain, it's not magic now. It's like, right. I know he shows up. And that's yep. a very different thing than looking at his eyes thinking, oh my God, I've known you forever.
Yeah, no, I get it. No, I get it.
Do
no,
you?
Totally.
Okay.
I loved your answer. I loved your answer. And I did have that marriage where we sustained a spiritual connection and had so many things in common and were best friends and supported each other and had challenges and worked through them and had a deeper, absolutely amazing union to the last breath he took. So it was not always easy, but I did feel the thread of that spiritual union or spiritual connection with
right.
him to the very end of his life. So I guess I just want to say to listeners that that is possible, but you have to use discernment. So, you know, just as you said, you know, there's sometimes danger in that. In my case, it was an incredible, incredible marriage. And I would wish that kind of connection, which is so deep, for everyone, but it also took work over time.
And he also left. And
he did.
And that it is it is such an inside job, because we all leave each other. No matter
That's right.
how wonderful it is, we all leave each other in the end. And so it has to be an inside job, because no matter how connected you are, you know, unless
That's right.
you die together, one person goes before the other person, and we're left with ourselves.
Yeah.
So,
yep. Yep. No, I love that in the book that you talk about, you know, it's how important it is that we work on ourselves all the way through, and that we are standing in our own truth, in our own identity, in our own purpose in life all the way through the relationship. And I feel that I've done that. And so I feel I miss him terribly, but I feel really strong, and I know what my purpose is here on the planet. So, so that's a good thing.
Yes, that is a good thing. That is a good thing. I mean, sometimes I look at my husband and I think, especially when we're really connected, and I just think I couldn't stand it if he died. And then I think he will die. You know, we're mm-hmm. 70 years old. He's going to die, or I'm going to die.
Yep.
It's going to happen.
Yep.
And,
yep.
You know, and I just don't know. I don't know how to live through something like that, but we are
it's
built
very
to live
hard.
Through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're built to work through it. And the more, we have to do a lot of work on ourselves to get through it. It's been a hard year and a half for me, but I'm still connected with him. And the book I'm writing that comes out in the fall is called You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven. And it's about connection with beings in spirit realms, including my husband. So I wrote it to help other people in terms of their losses and so forth. But anyway, back to your book. I'd like to get back to the cycles, because we got talking about...
Okay, I was
merging.
Just going to say one more thing. One
sure.
more thing about that, which is
sure.
about the soulmate thing, is that real intimacy and intensity are different. I think that that's another the intensity of feeling the familiarity of another person is, I think that there's another trouble in it, which it gives us some sort of a picture that it could be easy. If we feel this intensity, mm-hmm. it may be sort of destiny, and therefore all we have to do is say yes. But we have mm-hmm. to do a lot more than say yes, in my experience, to a relationship. We have to really work in the hard places and the tough places, mostly in ourselves, but also what comes up in the relationship. So that's another addition to that question. That's a great question, and we could talk about that a long time.
We can
go
show on
in any
that,
direction
Linda.
You want. Huh?
Yeah, we may have. So we could have a whole show on that. We may have to. We may have to do this again. Tell listeners more about your five cycles, because what we talked about mainly was merging, the first one.
Yeah, merging is when we first fall in love. We know that it's mediated by lots of chemicals. We know that there's brain changes in the when they take do a PET scan of somebody in the first romantic stage of love. The part of the brain that lights up is the same part of the brain that lights up with marijuana, cocaine, gambling. This is not sounding so good. But that there's a lot of dopamine, which is that pleasure center of our brain that we get downloaded when we have those feelings. And so that there's this love cocktail. You know, remember the goddess of love, Aphrodite, her son was Cupid. And in the old stories, and still now it goes through this day, that his job was to take the arrow and aim it towards an unsuspecting person. And as soon as they felt the arrow, they'd fall in love with the person next to them. I think Shakespeare's full of that. And we use Cupid cards on Valentine's Day, don't we? And so so now we know that there was something in that love potion. And what it does is it causes us to see the best of the other person. Now, that's all well and good if that other person has good character, has integrity, has done their own work in their life. It's all well and good if we're a good match. But the chemicals don't just go off when we are attracted to somebody who's right for us. For some of us, they go off when we're attracted to somebody who's wrong for us. So it's important to not think of the chemicals. The strength of the chemicals is, I remember that there was a book years ago called How to Break Your Attachment to a Person. And one of the things he says in that book is that, or your addiction to a person, I can't remember what, but he said the strength of your longing is not necessarily related to the strength of your love. It may be related to the strength of your addiction. So what really happens, in a relationship, the romantic stage is great. And I say, love it, enjoy it, have a great time. But I don't think that's not the moment to make the decisions. You really need to know who the other person is when they don't get their own way, when things don't go well, when there's trouble, when they have to deal with your mother, your kids, your brother. A difficult work situation, that there's a lot of data that we need. And so what happens? We fall in love with qualities, and we think that those qualities are who the person is. And then as the chemicals start to wear off, we move into stage two, the power struggle. The chemicals are wearing off often quickly. What we start to notice is that the things that we once admired begin to irritate us. I thought every character in that book has some part of me in it, really. I think people said, when you write every, even though they're fictional characters, they're really about us. And there's a way that Charlie and Megan have, it's a stretch, but they really remind me of my husband and I. He's a New Zealander. He's a country person. He loves the woods. He loves camping. He loves outdoors. I'm from San Francisco. I still think the Four Seasons is a hotel. And when we fell in love with each other, I took him, this is really funny, I took him shopping. He couldn't, he's a guy, he'd go and get a shirt. I want a white shirt, thanks, bye. But he loved shopping. We'd go into stores and he'd say, I never knew how much fun this was. We'd go to restaurants, we'd go to the city and hang out and spend a lot of money and a lot of time in a restaurant. And I'd go with him camping. I'd go with him to the woods. We'd go on these mountain hikes. And it was so romantic to be out in the woods. And my Kiwi vet, he's a veterinarian. And then I remember one day I said, I'm gonna go up. I need some shoes. Why don't you come with me? He said, I can't think of anything more torturous than to be in a shopping mall. I said, why? You loved it. He said, I don't love it anymore. And I remember going out with him camping one time. And waking up thinking, what am I doing in this tent? This is so awful. I want to pick up the phone and call somebody. I don't like it here. I don't like these bugs. And that, we move into the power struggle, in the beginning, knitters become campers. And in the second stage, yeah, you kind of go back to who you are. And also, I think the qualities, you know, that we love. You know, he used to say, "You're so generous. I love the way you give money to everybody, especially people with dogs." And then one day, I remember we were sharing a bank account. He said, "You're so impulsive, the way you give that money away." You know, this is from our joint account now, where he said, "You know, you don't have discernment. You just pass it out. Same quality, but a different perspective." The power struggle starts to happen, and that's good. That's a good thing. It's not a bad thing, but it's a hard thing when it starts to happen because we think, okay, who is this person? We're not in La La Land anymore. And the other thing that we start to notice in the power struggle is that our anxiety and stress begin to increase. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, we act differently. Our communication changes when we're under stress. When we're not under stress, our heart's open and we are, you know, unconditional. But under stress, we become different. We have this joke about the Monday morning syndrome, which is we have a great weekend and we're sort of in laid back time. Monday morning, it's me, really. Actually, it's him thinking about it too. But all of a sudden I become formal and sort of bossy, and I say, "Could you get me my latte? I have to go to work. I can't talk about that." And we're in a work mode. Under stress, we're looking at somebody sometimes who looks very different than the person we fell in love with.
Mm-hmm.
We feel less vulnerable. Sex starts to change. You know, one of the things about the merge is that people are more vulnerable, and it also acts as an aphrodisiac. But in the second stage, we move back to our normal way of being sexually. And often, with couples, desire discrepancy is one of the biggest troubles that they report, mm-hmm. where one person has a higher sex drive than the other. We get back to our normal sex drive. So that and because we don't know this, we don't think, and we have repetitive arguments, which I call the loop, and I go into that a lot in the book.
Yeah.
The repetitive arguments, everything, you know, just everything goes back to this one argument of you're not available emotionally, or you're always telling me what to do, or stop handing me a list, or, you know, it goes round and round, those things.
Mm-hmm.
As that starts to happen, because people don't know, this is normal, because they don't know that, they think something's wrong with the relationship, and then that creates stress, and then that in and of itself can create another whole set of problems. What's wrong? Am I with the wrong person? You don't bring me, remember that song, mm-hmm. that Barbara Streisand song years ago, "You Don't Bring Me Flowers Anymore"?
Yes.
We stop showing up in a certain way, and it's actually when we need to show up more.
Yes.
It's actually when we need to be more loving. That's where the skill set comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, Susan, is I think that for most of us, we didn't learn a lot of good skills, because they really weren't available, about how to deal with struggles and how to deal with disappointment. You know, there's always rupture in relationships.
That's rupture, right.
You know, just when you think about when you make love, one person rolls away first. You can't just stare at each other. One person sort of, you've been really intimate, and then one person closes their eyes and goes to sleep first. But we can't stay in that merge state all the time.
Yeah.
And right, you're really hearing this. I'm just hearing you say yes.
I'm hearing it. I know. I really love how you're explaining this.
Okay. Good. So that is the power struggle, and we get something going there, which I call loops, which are infinity loops that go round and round. They're the same fights, and it sort of starts there, and then it escalates.
Let me just start a question though, just because it's on my mind. I'm afraid I'm going to forget. A lot of people think it's time to break up. We're going to need to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about this. Is that stage the sign that you should break up as a couple or not? So let's talk about that, and we'll come back in a moment with Linda Carroll and her book, Love Cycles.
We Carry the Light with host Dr. Susan Allison is the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. You'll hear from guests who model how to be the highest, brightest, most evolved, fulfilled, and conscious humans possible. Tune in each Thursday, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right. Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Tune in each week to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher on TransformationTalkRadio.com, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Tune in and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information.
You got attitude? Keys to the rescue. Adjust your attitude with Keys Clear Protein Waters. So refreshing. Just a few sips of Keys will give you a whole new outlook thanks to 22 grams of the happiest protein on earth. Tongue-tingling tasty without the guilt of naughty or nasty ingredients. If that doesn't put a smile on your face, maybe you need to drink too. Put a little woohoo in your attitude with Keys Protein Water. On Amazon or at Keys, K-E-E-S, please.com.
Naturopathic doctor, founder of the Martha's Vineyard Holistic Retreat, and author of the New York Times bestseller 21 Pounds in 21 Days, Dr. Ronnie DeLuce has helped tens of thousands of people, including celebrities and athletes, with her message of lifestyle change. Now Dr. Ronnie DeLuce wants to help you. You too can be saved. Email Dr. Ronnie DeLuce at info@ronniedeluceonradio.com and visit mvholisticretreat.com. Dr. Ronnie DeLuce, your partner in wellness.
Transformation Talk Radio, the new mainstream in talk radio.
Welcome back, everyone, to We Carry the Light. This is Dr. Susan, and I have Linda Carroll with me, who is the author of Love Cycles, the Five Essential Stages of Lasting Love. So before the break, Linda, I asked you a question, you know, is it this the time for couples to call it quits when they're in that second stage?
No, it's the time for them to get to work, to start to understand what's going on. And that's often when people come in and see me, or even when it gets to the third stage, when they come in and they say, well, we're not in love, you know, this is the biggie. Like, we're not in love anymore. That's what they say. Mm-hmm. We're not in love anymore. So what's wrong? Should we quit? No, this is the stage where you start to practice loving behavior. Mm-hmm. It's the stage where you start figuring out, who am I when I don't get what I want? Mm-hmm. Who am I when you're not in the mood where you're going to give me all this unconditionality? And I think, you know, another thing that comes into it that's very true, and I'm a therapist, and this is my, of course, this is where I look, but I think it's more than that. I think that there's truth in it for all of us, that one of the things we're learning how to do is how to be attached in a relationship to a real person, an imperfect person. Mm-hmm. And depending on what happened when we were younger, what we learned about attachment, we replay that, what we saw. You know, I have a couple that I remember working with. One of them had a father who left when he was 7, and the other person had a mother who died when she was 7.
Oh,
and
gosh.
They were so afraid to really let go in love, because love meant you were going to get your heart broken. And they each had the same wound in them. And so they were so interrupted. in their attachment. So what happened, all those stories start to come in and they start to play out. And our early attachment story has, I think, so much to do with how we manage the second stage. The third stage is, if stage one was enchantment, stage three is really disenchantment. What mm-hmm. happens at stage one is we find evidence to support everything we love about the other person. And we make excuses for everything that is not lovable about them. In stage mm-hmm. three, we do the opposite. We find evidence to support everything that's wrong. Even the way, you know, they even the shirt they wear, the shoes they wear, the way that they put their clothes down, whatever it is, it's like, I can't bear that. I have this, I'm glad my husband's not listening to this, but one of the things about him is that I call him a dropper in my angry moments. You know, he puts things down, he'll drop his clothes, or he'll put things down and not pick them up. And I can always, it's like a barometer of the relationship. I can think of times when I have been so angry at him and feel so disconnected that his clothes are on the floor and I want to burn them. And I sort of kick them into mm-hmm. the closet and feel sort of vicious with these clothes. And I also think of the times, it happened recently where he had gone off to work and he left his stuff in a pile. And I just picked up these dear clothes of my wonderful partner and I put them where they needed to be and felt so loving doing it. And then I started laughing and I thought, this is the same pile that makes me want to smash things, you know? And so it's like a measurement. And in that disillusionment stage, stage three, nothing is right. You know, nothing. Mm-hmm. And so you have to really work against your own nature to still be loving. I mean, I really think that's where it's at for me, to still do loving behaviors and to try mm-hmm. to keep giving them the benefit of the doubt. The repetitive argument turns into infinity loops then, which I get into a lot in the book, and you can become a lot emotionally closed and protective. People, this is where affairs happen. In this stage, you know, you start to hear a lot of criticism and feel critical, and you're with this person that is saying to you, you are the most unemotionally available, you're the most emotionally unavailable person I know, and you go to work and somebody says, you're so emotionally available, and then you think, mm-hmm. I'm with the wrong person, and that's the problem. Mm-hmm. This other person sees how great I am. But, you know, in this, and so I think we act out our worst in stage three. The other, this is, I'm kind of diverting, but last night I was giving a talk at a library about love cycles, and as I was driving, I was thinking about the stages, and I was thinking about, I suddenly had this sense of wonder that this sounds sort of a wild thing to say, but I had this sense of wonder that my partner really loves me. And it's very different when he fell in love with me because he knows the worst. When we're cornered, when we're scared or hurt, nobody wants a video of who they are to be mm-hmm. put on the internet. Unfortunately, some people have had it, not to their knowledge, without knowing it. But, you know, none of us are pretty in that state that he has seen my absolute worst and he mm-hmm. still loves me. And how do we get to that? I was thinking about that all the way as I drove to this other town mm-hmm. about, you know, having someone in love with you because you're looking your best and you're dressed to the nines and you're acting your best, that's great for the ego. But knowing that somebody really loves you because you've gone through disenchantment and they know what is not lovable, that is really good for the soul.
It sure is. It sure is. Yep, I've experienced that with my husband and he with me, and it's unbelievable that we can be at our worst and the person understands who we are at a deeper level and forgives us and still loves us despite our defects, despite our flaws.
And that's very different in the beginning, isn't it? When you're under the spell and you have the dopamine working, it's very different to feel that when you're not so under the spell. So in disillusionment, you know, we all act out. And some people do it smart. They do it nicely. You know, they're sort of quiet and just kind of indifferent. Some people do it loudly. They fight all the time. But this is a stage where we really are questioning the relationship. You know, I think that there's the two instincts we have, to merge and to have solitude, that they're also at play here. There's a time in the beginning when everything is us and we. And then there's a time, and often it hits that disillusionment period where we don't want to hear we ever again. I want my girlfriends. You know, I want to just sleep in a bed by myself tonight. I don't want to have to be listen to your breathing even. And, you know, and there's sort of, you know, I can remember, I don't know, we were about 16 years in or something, and I remember getting sick and saying, well, I think I'll sleep in a different bed because I'm sick. And then I remember thinking, I like this. This is really nice. And then thinking, oh, my God, is the marriage over? What's wrong? Nothing was wrong. I was just feeling myself. And so so in that stage of disillusionment, those instincts come in where we start missing what we've given up of ourselves. When we and at some point, you know, I think that there's ambivalence in relationships that most people have sometimes. Even if you know in your heart you belong or you should be with another person, I think there's moments that for most of us, it's like, what am I doing here? And if I still was single, I could live in San Francisco and not have to deal with, you know, chickens in the backyard.
I get it. I get it.
The chickens are actually mine, but I was trying to give it a good... But they're pets.
No, I get it.
To him, they're egg layers. To me, they're pets. So we even do chickens differently. Anyway, at some point, though, we get into decision where we've been stuck for a while and we think, do I really want to do this? Do I want to be here? And the decision, we can do a couple of things. We can do nothing and just be ambivalent and stay that for the rest of our lives. And we all know marriages like that. Mm-hmm. We can leave without doing any work and just say, I just want a different life. I want it to be easier. And if we do that, we're probably going to end up having the same issues with another person.
Yep.
Or we can say, you know what, I'm going to find out what these skills are that we're so lucky to have in the world. And there's two skill sets that I think of. I'm going to figure out what I need to do in this relationship to give it my best. And I'm not going to make any decision until I do that. And that takes us into the realm of wholehearted love. And I think of wholehearted because the skills, first of all, they're self skills mostly, and communication skills are certainly important, and I teach them. But the big skill is, how do we manage ourselves? You know, what do we do? What do I do? You know, nobody changes because we try and negotiate it. You know, if we could get our partners to change, I'd be out of a job as a therapist. But it's not what happens.
That's right. No, it's
we change.
Not.
We do the work because we want to. So I remember, you know, Tim would in this whole. So this is the kind of work he would work all day in the garden, and then he would say, "Come see what I've done," and we played this out for a long time. And I'd go out. I'd already be mad, and I'd go out to see what he would have done, and what I would see in this 8 hours of pruning and planting and trimming. I would see that the hose wasn't put away. That's all I'd see. Nothing else. The only thing was what was in my path that he had left there. And I remember one day consciously saying to myself, I've got to change this. This isn't about him. It's about me. And
That's
started to think about how patient he is because I always forget to put the keys back. And he comes in the house and he says, "Where's the keys?" I say, "I don't know." He looks in my purse, which scares him. It's one of the few things that really scares him is getting into my purse. women's purses. He says it really freaks him out. And he goes in my purse and he finds the key and he doesn't complain and he manages it. I started to think about that and I thought, you know, every time I go out and he calls me out to see what's in the yard, before I go out, I'm gonna hold that in my mind, how patient and good he is to me about my losing keys. And
That's right.
It worked. Yes. I started to go out there, and I stopped seeing that the hose wasn't put away. And I began to see all the good things he did. But that was self-work. We'd have talks. I'd say, just put the hose away. Then I can see all the good things you do. But he didn't do it. But then what happened is I changed it myself. That's a small example.
You know, Linda, just yeah, it makes total sense. I just want to, just for listeners, just say that in your book, you have these six essential skills, and they're wonderful. And you're really, the number one is understanding your part. And
yes,
in a sense, that's what you're talking about. And I tell couples that and clients that all the time, that, you know, we have to look at our part. And
yes,
when you said that people keep, you know, it's serial monogamy in this culture. So people end a relationship and then they have a new one and then they have another one and then another one without working on themselves. They're attracting the same thing and they're the same person in each relationship.
Yes, exactly.
So I love this. I love what you're saying about, you know, I think it's so important that the only person we can change, you know, our own thinking, our own words and actions is us, period.
That's right. That's right. And that doesn't mean, you know, if you're in a really a difficult relationship that doesn't get better, or you're with someone who has real troubles in the world, and you still can't change them, but changing yourself doesn't necessarily have the outcome of the relationship getting better. But when I work with couples, sometimes I start when there's one person who's ambivalent and one person really wants it to work out, and they ask me, you know, what do I think? And I say, you know, I don't know what you should do in your marriage. That's not my business. I'm going to try to help you heal. And from a healing place, you can make the right decision. That's not my decision. What I know how to do is help couples heal the trouble. And then they decide whether they want to be in the marriage or not. And by teaching these skills, these six essential skills, and number one, and you know, one of the things about number one, about knowing you're part of the trouble, people often get that confused with the word fault. Well, whose fault is it? I guess it's my fault. Mm. And I don't like the word. I think it's it's a different
word. It's
blaming. You know, blaming. Yeah. You know, it may be my responsibility or it may be my protection, which is to get critical and sarcastic, is different than fault. That's what I do when I'm protected. It's a way I fight. And so if I look at that as fault, it's another kind of criticism. If I look at it as my protection, it can be really hurtful to my partner, but it comes out of needing to protect myself. It's kinder to myself. It somehow gives me the strength to change it more than, okay, it's your fault. You know, stop doing that.
Yep, that blaming and that self-judgment, it doesn't help. And I like the word assess, that we assess and then correct. So
yes,
we see
that's
something
good,
isn't that?
That's
assess and correct is what I try to use with people, because it you know, you take the judgment out of it, which we all have enough to work on, you know, that we need to be kinder and more compassionate with ourselves and others.
Yes. That's right. Good. So we're okay, okay, so then you want me to talk more about the skills?
Yeah, then I think the skills are wonderful, because I think that they're going to give people something, you know, a skill set that they can go, okay, you know, I can do this.
Well, another skill is accepting the differences. I one of the things I say in the book, and I actually say a lot, is that the number one argument people have is what I call the "you're not me" argument. You don't see things like I do. You know, you like camping. What's wrong with you? You don't like going to plays. I can't believe it. You know, we want the other, and we do the same thing around gifts. We do the same thing around when our partner's sick. You know, I love pity, connection, bad movies when I'm sick. And Tim loves to be left alone, a bowl of soup. And so for years, I would hover around him, and he would just put something down for me to eat and leave. He's not me and I'm not him. This is the big lesson.
Yep.
You know, how can I love you as you? If you're a person who wants a beautiful restaurant, and for your and for my birthday, that's what you give me, but I want a home-cooked meal, we miss. So part of the whole the growth of loving is learning how to really see another person rather than they're not us, they're someone different. So understanding that the other person isn't you and accepting differences, learning collaboration, which is really different than power struggles or compromise. Collaboration is so hard, because you've got to be able to really get the other person's needs and points of view with empathy. True collaboration means I have to understand why it is you say that you don't want a dog, even though I want one more than anything in the world, or you don't want a child, whatever it is. And it's threatening. So it means we have to really walk in their shoes.
That's right.
Another skill is nourishing the relationship even when you don't feel like it. For 30 years, every morning, my husband brings me a latte, and he sometimes gives it to me with a smile and a hug. Sometimes he just hands it to me. He's busy. Sometimes when he's really been mad, he'll put it on his side of the bed, so I have to reach for it, sort of to punish me a little.
A little passive-aggressive behavior.
Yeah, right. Here's your latte. But he brings that latte, that love, it's like a love song. He brings it every day. And that's what I'm talking about, the nourishing the relationship, doing the things for each other, which we do because we're in it, because that's part of the deal. Even when I'm mad at you, I'm still going to, you know, whatever it is, you know, I'm the one that's going to get gifts for your mother or whatever that is. And being able, that's a spiritual practice.
Yes, it is. It's a spiritual practice. I really miss my husband. My husband was this beautiful Buddhist person who was so giving to people. And I would be cold, but not saying a word. And he would silently get up and take something really soft, some blanket, and he would just really lovingly cover me, sitting on the couch watching a movie or whatever. And so that kind of gesture is what you're talking about.
And how hard
sweet.
To let that one go, huh?
Oh, my gosh. Just let him go, period. It's been very hard. But anyway, that's the kind of thing we're talking about is that nourishment, nourishing one another and doing very kind and generous, being generous with each other.
And generosity is not what we do when we're madly in love. That's not generosity. That's fun for me. When I'm madly in love and I do things for you, that's a real high for me. Generosity is when you've really done something that makes me angry, and I still have a warm dinner that is something you really like when you've worked hard all day. That's real generosity, because in a way it goes against the instinct, you know?
Yes, it does.
Nourish the relationship when you don't feel like it. Keep your own tank filled. Boy, that's an important one. Keeping your own tank filled, doing things to take care of yourself, and because how can I give to you when I'm not caring for myself? So finding ways to look after ourselves and honoring that I have to look after me so that I have something to give to you.
Right. It's you have to fill yourself up first, put that mask, that oxygen mask on you first.
That's right.
Exactly. So totally get it.
We have about
6 minutes to, and we have two more stages, but I'm wondering about, I really want you to talk about your last stage of wholehearted loving, but there is a decision that couples have to make first. And then if you do the work.
Yeah. And sometimes you can have wholehearted loving when you're, and leave. You know, I have a couple that I've worked with, and they were in really hard straits, and they decided to do the work, and one of them decided at the end that they didn't want to be in the relationship. Mm-hmm. But it was, and for all kinds of reasons that were so made such good sense. But at this point, they were really in touch with their love for the other person. And so it was a very different kind of separation. It was a parting that came out of loving rather than, you know, and pain because I'm hurting you rather than, well, screw you. Well, I'm going to get a better lawyer. There was a lot of healing that happened in that relationship before.
It's beautiful when that happens.
Yeah,
it's beautiful when that happens. And I found it, I'm also a therapist. I find it rare, but I'm working with a couple right now and that's, they are divorcing, but they're doing it really consciously and with a lot of love for each other. And it's, you know, there's crying and so on because they're going through it, but there's also beauty in it and healing for each of them.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's true. The last stage, wholehearted love, is where the two skills I talk about to get there is one is the communication skills that we read about. The other are the wisdom tradition skills, generosity, empathy, forgiveness, all those working with ourselves, radical acceptance of ourselves and our partner, learning where we have lost our sense of humor, bringing it back, understanding that it's an inside job, that we all lose each other, and that we're here for just a short while together, and learning to manage, you know, looking at our part. If I'm really defensive, that's my work to work with. Becoming more resilient and recovering more quickly from our loops and our arguments. Tim and I have this expression. We used to use it in frustration, and now we laugh. It's very simple. We say everything, because there were a couple of years that were so hard, and we couldn't agree on anything. In fact, we even put a line down the garden. You know, he had his side and I had mine, because we could not agree on anything, and it was like, you're on my side. It was everything. Everything doesn't work. And now we can laugh sometimes when we're not agreeing on something, and one of us will say everything, and we have our humor back.
Good.
And seeing our lifestyle as a co-creation. The more of me, the better the adventure we have together. The more of you. So it means we encourage each other to be the best that we can be, even if it means, you know, encouraging our partner to go off to Nepal without us. That we find it's that Scott Peck thing about supporting the other's growth. Wholehearted love means we are more whole in ourselves, and we can live more fully from that place.
Wonderful. I love that. I love your chapter, Love is an Inside Job. And you've been going over what you call the six C's, that everything's a choice, and then there's commitment, celebration, compassion, co-creation, and courage. And I love that. It's really uplifting, and I feel that it gives people hope when they read the book that they can do it. They can do that.
Well, thank you so much. I guess we're getting close to the end, aren't we?
We're getting close to the end, and I'd like you to tell listeners how they can get your book and how they could contact you if they'd like to.
Well, my website is lovecycles.org. The book is called Love Cycles, The Five Essential Stages of Lasting Love. It's on Amazon. It's on my website. It's at Barnes & Noble. It's maybe in your bookstore. The book is, I think it's out in four languages now, or it got bought by Korea, Turkey, the Americas. So you can order it anywhere that you order books. I'm a coach, so I work by coaching and Skype and phone, and I also work individually with people. Again, you can find me on two websites, lovecycles.org or lindaacarroll.com.
Wonderful. I've enjoyed our conversation so much, especially your own humor, your willingness to share your own personal stories. It makes you so personable and really human for listeners. You're not just this incredible therapist and author. You are a real woman in a long-term marriage, and you are making work with work and with a great deal of love. Thank you so much, Linda, for on the show.
Thank you, Susan. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Have a great rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
So. And thank you, my great listeners, also for taking the time to learn and transform, to stretch and reach new levels in your own growth. Next week, we welcome back Dr. Rick Hansen, author of Buddha's Brain, and his latest work, Hardwiring Happiness. Get ready to learn how to create more joy and peace within you. Until then, I'm Dr. Susan Allison, and remember that you carry the light.
You've been listening to the transformative show, We Carry the Light, with host Dr. Susan Allison, the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. Who are you right now, and who do you want to be? What is it that makes you happy, helps you feel fulfilled, and living your purpose? Tune in every Thursday, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine. We Carry the Light with host Dr. Susan Allison is the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. You'll hear from guests who model how to be the highest, brightest, most evolved, fulfilled, and conscious humans possible. Tune in each Thursday, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right. Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Tune in each week to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Tune in and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information.
You got attitude? Keys to the rescue. Adjust your attitude with Keys Clear Protein Waters. So refreshing. Just a few sips of Keys will give you a whole new outlook thanks to 22 grams of the happiest protein on earth. Tongue-tingling tasty without the guilt of naughty or nasty ingredients. If that doesn't put a smile on your face, maybe you need to drink too. Put a little woohoo in your attitude with Keys Protein Water. On Amazon or at Keys, K-E-E-S, please.com.
Naturopathic doctor, founder of the Martha's Vineyard Holistic Retreat, and author of the New York Times bestseller 21 Pounds in 21 Days, Dr. Ronnie DeLuce has helped tens of thousands of people, including celebrities and athletes, with her message of lifestyle change. Now Dr. Ronnie DeLuce wants to help you. You too can be saved. Email Dr. Ronnie DeLuce at info@ronniedeluceonradio.com and visit mvholisticretreat.com. Dr. Ronnie DeLuce, your partner in wellness.
We Carry the Light with host Dr. Susan Allison is the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. You'll hear from guests who model how to be the highest, brightest, most evolved, fulfilled, and conscious humans possible. Tune in each Thursday, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right. Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Tune in each week to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Tune in and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information.
You got attitude? Keys to the rescue. Adjust your attitude with Keys Clear Protein Waters. So refreshing. Just a few sips of Keys will give you a whole new outlook thanks to 22 grams of the happiest protein on earth. Tongue-tingling tasty without the guilt of naughty or nasty ingredients. If that doesn't put a smile on your face, maybe you need to drink too. Put a little woohoo in your attitude with Keys Protein Water. On Amazon or at Keys, K-E-E-S, please.com.
Transformation Talk Radio, the new mainstream in talk radio.